Welcome to Leverage Masters, airing weekly on Tuesdays at 12 Eastern and on demand on iTunes and Blog Talk Radio. Leverage Masters hosts Jack Humphrey and Gina Gaudio-Graves discuss leverage strategy with guest leveragists. Be sure to subscribe to Leverage Masters in your favorite podcatcher for great tips and case studies on using leverage to achieve your biggest goals much faster.
Well, welcome everyone to another episode of Leverage Masters. I am your co-host, Gina Gaudio-Grace, along with my co-host and all-around partner in crime, Jack Humphrey. We are the co-founders of TheLeverageists.com and Divizio.com, the all-new affiliate network for companies doing good. How are you today, Jack?
Great. A little, getting a little cooler up here. It's nice to get out of that massive heat wave we were having. Hopefully we're out of it. Who knows at this point?
It is.
How's Florida?
It is definitely cooler up here, too. I'm not in Florida yet. I'm still in Chicago.
Oh, that's right. You're not in Florida still. You're up here with us northerners.
It's going down to 57 degrees tonight. I'm like, oh, my gosh, Mom, I'm going to freeze.
That's perfect. 57 is awesome.
Oh, that's cold.
you snowbirds,
anyway,
man.
I know. We have a fantastic guest for everyone today. Why don't you tell them a little bit more about him?
We have Larry Boyer, who's a trusted advisor to individuals, businesses, and government agencies. His work integrates the worlds of business analytics, personal development, and executive coaching to help accelerate the success of individuals, teams, and businesses. With over 15 years of experience leading innovative quantitative analysis teams, Larry brings a unique perspective, rigor, and concise, no-nonsense approach to career development strategies and entrepreneurialism to his training and coaching clients. Larry, welcome to Leverage Masters.
Oh, thank you. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So there's a little bit of a background. We'll get into more of that, of course. But I want to start you off the way we start everybody every week, which is, we heard a little bit of your background, but what's burning in your belly today? What got you out of bed today, ready to greet the day?
I'm really interested in is always the new technologies that are coming out and developing. And so, this morning I was just really interested in some new developments in artificial intelligence and what's happening there. And then just helping people to go understand what's happening. So this is really what gets me out of bed every morning.
Cool. So you're saying you might be able to actually get somebody like me to understand what's happening with AI.
With AI and a lot of the new technologies. It's and that's really what I enjoy doing is helping people understand kind of the new economic and technology climate that exists, and so that you can leverage it yourself, right? So the whole point is, to be able to take advantage of the new developments that are happening rather than be run over by them.
What are some of the cool things that are happening that are going to affect people like listeners of our show, business people, coaches, consultants, bloggers, all kinds of service providers? I talk to a lot of people, and I think we all feel a little bit lost in this world. You know, what is coming? What should we be looking out for? It gets very confusing, and we're very happy that there are people out there like you who are willing to figure this stuff out for us and tell us about it.
Sure. Well, there's a lot of new technologies that are happening. Everything from, like virtual reality, augmented reality, drone technologies that are being used in a lot of places. Blockchain is here. It's being used in businesses already. So not so much the cryptocurrencies, but the actual blockchain technologies themselves.
Yeah.
Advances in medical technologies that have implications for things like, how long are you going to live and how long are you going to live actually a healthy life? And a lot of us really haven't thought about that. The average 10-year-old today can expect to live to be 110.
Wow.
Which is remarkable. And we don't even think about that. What does that mean for us? and those are important questions. It's important to be aware of the facts. And I've actually put down a lot of this in, I just released a book a couple of weeks ago, The Robot Next Cubicle. And it starts out with helping just to understand what are the technologies that are out there, what's the economic environment, what's happened in the past so that you can learn from it, as well as understand what's different about the future from the past so that you can make the distinctions and adjustments.
Well, I just saw that, and I was like, I wonder if this is – because it's hard to tell on I guess it's not if you look all the way down. Yes, August 7th, 2018. Amazon doesn't make it easy to find out if a guy's book is new or not. So that's brand new. I mean, that just came out. That's – congratulations, first of all.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, cool. So we're current. I'm, like, doing some research and thinking, all right, I'm going to track this guy down, find out what he's all about. And I did not know if this was the same Larry Boyer for a second. And because I didn't see that in your current bio that we have, but I'm excited because I want to talk about this book. Can you give us just a little bit more of a synopsis of what we can learn in Robot in the Next Cubicle?
Sure. So what I've done with this book is make it a little different than a lot of other books you might see on technology and technology change. So I wanted this to apply to you yourself as an individual. You know, a lot of times we read books and stories and we hear things about, you know, well, is AI going to destroy more jobs than it creates, or will it create more jobs than it destroys? And these are really not questions that you and I need to ask ourselves, right? Those are questions that, somebody like a world leader needs to worry about, right? They're driving like the aircraft carrier, right? So it really doesn't matter whether a million new jobs are created or not. To you, right? What matters is what's happening to your job and your career and your future. And so you need to know and understand what it is, what the economic environment looks like, what the technology environment looks like, what that means to you, and where the dangers and pitfalls are, as well as where the opportunities are, right? So, I talk about all of that in a real kind of direct, no-nonsense way, right? No fluff here, trying to be grand about things and say, well, you know, this is all fantastic or it's all horrible. The reality is it really depends on you, and you have to assess where you're at.
Okay, cool. Actually, that's a really cool angle because all I've ever heard about it is from the, you know, government level of the matrix, you know, down. And it's like, that's okay, but I don't know what that means for anybody I care about. I also don't know what it means for entrepreneurs. I don't know exactly. Sure. You hear things. We hear things a lot. I mean, AI is something, if you have a news reader, you're going to thumb over an article about something to do with AI and jobs and things like that on the daily. But it doesn't really make any much of a connection with me. Like, I'm interested in people coming out of the workforce and becoming entrepreneurs and needing training. Needing coaching, needing, services and things like that. So I'm always interested in, you know, finding out, is there another wave of people that are about to come out going, I can't handle this situation, I'm getting, or they got replaced, or they felt they were in danger of being replaced, so they're being proactive and they're starting their own companies, consultancies, things like that. It's all very fuzzy. Because there's no real place that I've ever heard of, and maybe you have one, where you can just really stay on top of these kinds of things. Now we have a book. That's cool. That's one more thing we didn't have yesterday, and we didn't have much yesterday.
Right. Well, so you're exactly right. There's not one single place that you can go to read about this, and you don't necessarily know whether something's being overhyped or not. There certainly is a lot of hype about any of these technologies and what they're capable of doing, or, you know, people let their imaginations run wild about where they're going. And then after a little while, it kind of wears off and say, well, nothing really has happened or changed. And you let your guard down. And then before you know it, you know, you get the rug pulled out from underneath you because it developed.
Yeah.
And that's really the cycle. And one of the things I talk about in the book is the growth of exponential technologies. Because they grow a little bit slower than what we are used to thinking of, because we think about in a linear fashion. So it's like, you know, if I tell you to take three steps, right, you know about how far you're going to be. But if I tell you to take three exponential steps, which would be one step, then two steps, then three steps, then four steps, like that, it's harder to say how far that's going to be, right? And so you would start out a little bit slower, and then suddenly this thing explodes. And so – the hype usually starts in the early part and it's growing slowly, and then you dismiss it because nothing's happening, and then suddenly it explosively grows. A good example would be like Amazon, right? If you remember back when Amazon started, people were laughing at it and how much money it was losing. Right? And nobody's
laughing at
today.
It. Nope.
You know, Tesla would be another one. You know, we don't know where it'll go. It could be a wild success, or it could fail, right? But it's in that kind of cusp area where it's going to go one way or the other. And who knows? So for entrepreneurs, we have to look at these things, right? Because it's a fantastic opportunity if you can learn about one of these technologies and how to use it and apply it to, you know, the kind of business that you're working with. You know, if you're coming out of the workforce and looking for something to do, right, these are great things to get involved with. And then like any entrepreneur, right, you have to be willing to put up with the failures that come along the way, right, the learning curves that come, and be persistent and just keep going no matter what happens. You kind of have to be the little engine that could.
It's really important, I think, for people to follow people who, like you, who really enjoy looking down that road, and as far down that road as you possibly can see. I think that exercises different muscles in your brain and makes you see things in a much different way. We've had a couple of guests like you on before, and I'm getting struck with the same kind of vibe here. Is like I'm reminding myself I did not pay as much attention to some things between those last guests and you as I promised myself I would, and I feel a little bit lost again. I feel like I need to be following people who really make it their practice. I used to do that in the mid 2000s, and people belong to my membership site, Blog Success and things, and I kind of fancied myself as the guy who is going to be able to tell you within a reasonable amount what's going to happen with your blogs and how you need to publish and what's going to happen with search and everything like that. And it was really exciting to be that guy, you know, to just spend my days really trying to figure out where all my people are going to want to be when something hits and trying to determine is that thing I think is going to hit really will and when. And and I kind of got out of that, you know, because it got very hard to keep up with. My mind was blown on a constant basis with the possibilities and getting just into some really whacked out ideas about what publishing on the internet would turn into, how it would affect entrepreneurs and all that kind of stuff. And I kind of went in a different direction. But it's pretty powerful because a lot of people really want to know what you know. Like, what do you lay awake and think about at night in terms of the things that you're interested in? Mine was publishing and everything because that's how entrepreneurs were doing, you know, content marketing to gain attention and market share, things like that. But what are the kinds of things that just make you stay up going, ooh, that's really, really exciting. If this happens, that's going to be incredible.
You know, it's a lot of these breakthroughs. Right now, I think, you know, so the artificial intelligence and blockchain are two of the real exciting ones. You know, I just said
give us an example of the blockchain stuff that you're excited about. What are you interested in there?
Sure. I was just at a conference, and they had a great example of an application of blockchain with Walmart, because they've been experimenting with using blockchain. And the president of the company came in, and he had a piece, little container of mangoes, and he threw it down on the table and told his team, trace this back to its source. And this is an important issue for like a lot of food safety and safety issues, right? Because whenever there's a problem, you need to know where it came from. So they did that, and they went through their process of that, and it took them 7 days to do that.
Oh, wow.
Then they went and built a blockchain solution that basically tracks everything. You know, and the whole point of blockchain is to create a system where you can't – it creates all of the linkages throughout the whole supply chain, right? You can't mess with it, and it's all automatically connected, you know, because it's like a chain. And when they did that, they were able to do it in 2 seconds. Once that was
approved. Wow, yeah, because it can't be messed with. They can't screw around with it. Is there provenance issues with food? Are people trying to do things with our supply chain that says it's originated here or spent this much time here, and actually people can fudge the numbers and fudge the data in the whole process now, can't they?
There is, and it's because, and they're also in multiple systems that don't talk to each other, right? And so that's part of the problem, right? But when you put them on blockchain, right, they're all chained together in one system. But you're right, there are people who try to falsify records about food, because I don't know, you might have a lower quality meat and you want to pass it off as something that was higher quality. But you can't do that when you start doing this and start scanning it at every step along the way. Right. And so you could, and in principle, and I think, you know, where the food technologies are going is you could actually probably see the cow where your beef came from and know everything about it, and including maybe what it ate, right? Because it could all be connected up together. And so
yeah,
you wouldn't be able to have any of this falsification of food. You would really know where your food came from. There's issues of, did your food come from China or Mexico, and people don't necessarily know that. It's very difficult to know that. Of course, once it's all, you can't know, unless there's a record you can trust.
I think someday in the future, people are going to be shocked at how grandma and grandpa just totally trusted whatever was said on the outside of their ground beef at the store,
right?
That, where it originated and everything, that people in the future won't believe that we trusted that implicitly,
right?
So much cause not to, compared to in the future, if this is going to happen, everybody's going to know for sure. It's really, blockchain is all about protecting the truthiness of data and of any kind. A lot of people are fixated on the cryptocurrency stuff and the banking things, but I love hearing stories about this because I think a lot more people need to know that there's a lot more use for blockchain than just what everybody's really hyped up about and that's on the cover of magazines right now.
Absolutely. It's a shame that these kinds of projects aren't making the headlines of the news because they're revolutionary. A lot of the shipping companies are working together to coordinate on creating a standard for blockchain. So when you ship things, across the ocean on the large vessels, where it's coming from, where it's going. Again, lots of counterfeit products. How do you know whether your shirt, your purse, or whatever is authentic one and not a knockoff?
I'm also wondering about a conservation issue now, because I've been reading a lot about how the high seas are really just the most lawless places on the planet, and lots of really weird stuff happens out there. There's even some pretty damaging stories about, human trafficking and slavery on ships in the high seas doing fishing and everything else. I wonder what blockchain could do to track. I just read an article about how they're satellite tracking a lot of the shipping industry's whereabouts, mm-hmm. fishing boats and everything, to try to determine what these guys are doing out there to our fisheries, to each other, because I think a lot of people are not being treated very well in that industry at all. And when you are tracking the truthiness of data, if those ships, if everybody has to do something, I guess they have to escape from the very beginning, because once you're on the blockchain and that data record is stored, there's nothing you can do. So I guess if you're still going to be a bad guy, you're going to have to fly so far under the radar that you just don't even get onto the chain with what it is you're doing or what it is you're providing people, where things originate.
Right, and then you're going to have people ask, where did it come from? Why aren't you on the blockchain? Right? It becomes really a truly underworld thing. And it's got to be kind of questionable, because even, organized crime will want these features, right? Organized crime is still set up as a pretty strong business and have a strong business model. It's just all illegal.
Yeah. Plus, it can't be cracked open by just anybody. So it never really occurred to me the organized crime people would love blockchain. My goodness. Because it's pretty well protected unless you have the key to unlock at the other end of the pipe. And thought of that, it might help these guys that are out there on the high seas committing, international problems with our fisheries and things like that. Interesting.
Yeah, like anything, right? It can be used for good or bad, right? That's true of any technology.
Mm-hmm.
We just have to recognize that, you know, and hope that you know we've got an overall benefit for everybody, and that everybody's really benefiting from this overall.
Well, what are some of the other things? Like, if you had to write the article today for Time Magazine or somebody else, why tracking? Like the Walmart example, or if you want to give another of the, I know you have myriad examples that you have been following, but why is this so much better? What kind of world then does that make for my 12-year-old in 10 mm-hmm. or 15 or 20 years?
Sure. Well, it enables trust for one thing, like you were talking about, and a lot of blockchains are developed to be open, so that you can actually see what's happening in them. So that you can't hide from people what's going on. So, for example, your food supply, you might have it be something where somebody can actually go in and see something about it, you know, and how it moves, you know, mm-hmm. and how the food moves through the food chain. You know, you could use it for voting, right? Because, you know, we've got all these questions now about, well, can votes be changed, you know, on all the voting machines? Well, if you've got blockchain and your vote is being recorded and it's being duplicated in multiple places, there's no way to change the vote without, you know, somebody knowing, oh, this one was changed. You know, we've got five other copies of it here that says it was this instead, right?
You know,
so
that,
there's a lot of, yeah.
That world might be closer than we think, because I don't think anybody needs to prove now whether or not that has happened or can happen. Now everybody's aware of how easily it could happen. That's almost like saying it did happen, because people just generally don't seem to trust what's going to happen here in the States in November like we used
right.
to, like we grew up thinking that everything was kosher. Now there's these hacker cons where people are getting these Diebold machines and showing the three-step process to get admin access to these voting machines that are all over the country, like no problem at all. It really, really is super easy. And I don't think it helps that they're showing people on YouTube how to do it, but they
right.
just don't want the machines to be used because they're so easily hackable. We really went more on trust of the system than absolute security. And I think that freaked a lot of people out. We were always exposed. These things were always easy to hack or whatever we were using. Even the paper
right.
ballot system was just, you know, they'd throw the paper ballots out on the shipping bay and walk back in and get another box and just leave it there. We just had a lot
yep.
of trust in the system that we now have had, you know, those experiences in the last couple of years where we're like, hey, I don't know if my vote's really going to count. I think people are ready for that part of blockchain right now if they
absolutely.
Knew about that.
Absolutely. You know, and it's a shame. You know, I think one of the other interesting things is how much these technologies are being developed in other parts of the world, and we don't hear about them or they're not being developed as much here in the U.S. So there are a lot of developing countries who are looking at and developing blockchain for voting. You know, and of course they're coming from a completely different angle from this, and so it's in some ways easier to implement. Right? You can just imagine what we would have to do to build a systemic blockchain voting technology to cover the entire United States, right? I mean, that's enormous.
Yeah.
We're not even really talking about it, right? We're just arguing about, you know, whether this happened or not in the last election. And
yeah.
not really doing anything to think about, well, what are we going to do about the future?
Well, and you say there are people who use things for good and bad. I can guarantee you there are some people out there thinking, what can we do while the system is the same as it is? Like, how long
oh,
will this party last? Because it seems like people are ready to change it. And whoever caused trouble in the last one is probably still thinking, hey, they're just dragging their feet. I'm going to be able to cause trouble until they fix this. And that bet you anything they're thinking about blockchain being their nemesis.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and there are other places where fraud comes in. I've done some work with fraud analysis. One of the things I think a lot of people don't realize, you know, when your identity is stolen, right? You know, somebody can go and do something like file unemployment in all 50 states for you, and they can file disability insurance claims in all 50 states for you, None of these systems talk to each other. They're entitlements. So generally speaking, you get the benefit once you apply for it without having to go through a huge approval process. And so organized criminals will just start collecting all of this money immediately because there's no way of verifying whether it's actually you or not. And then you might get a surprise someday because, you know, the police show up and say, hey, you know, you're defrauding the government because you're collecting unemployment benefits and you're not unemployed.
What does it look like? What does it look like for a person to be? I've read a little bit. I've seen mostly headlines on this, but I bet you could explain it really nicely for us. What does it look like to have a secure persona with blockchain and other technologies, like, you know, where you can walk around and feel a little bit more bulletproof against identity theft and things like that, where a verification systems that you're talking about are really in place? What does my life look like? How do I feel about that?
Right. So you would have some sort of unique key, you know, that would, you know, somehow be assigned to you. You know, and we kind of use, you know, like social security numbers like that, only we know that they've all been brought out. So the weak point in any of this is this human to the technology interface, right? So as long as you don't give out in some way the kind of key information that you have, there's no way for somebody else to get it and replicate it. But there's always going to be that kind of weak link, you know, where the people interface with the technologies. But, you know, you can look at, again, with the blockchains and cryptocurrencies, you know, as long as you don't give out the key that you have to get into the system, nobody can really steal your cryptocurrencies. That's one of the things that makes it safe. But if it's in those interfaces where people interact with exchanges that the weakness occurs, and that's where people can go in and try to do it. So we've got to figure out how do we get around that human to technology interface, because once you're into the technology can lock it all down. And that could be things like, you know, biometrics, for example. And that might be one way to do it.
Here's my blood. You can't hack that unless you snuck into my house last night, knocked me out and took some of my blood. I mean, I guess there really is. I think we've watched a lot of James Bond movies and other things. probably a lot more recent than that for this exciting stuff. But, I don't know. I think we're just in a suspicion world now. I think the suspicion level of humanity across the globe has just gone up in the last, you know, half a decade or more. And, it's really weird. I was like, oh, that sounds really cool. I will be, everything about me, all my data will be encrypted. And I even fantasize about going up to a certain service provider, a hospital, something like that, and only unlocking exactly what they need and stop giving people like that all my records just because I gave them my social security number. I mean, I don't want those guys to have anything other than what it takes to cure me of my ailment. And vice versa, anybody that you do business with, people who do credit checks and things on you, I want them to get – I wish we were in control of that. We have like three major credit agencies that know everything about us, and we have to just rely on them to not get hacked and not get – and, of course, they have been. I think in the future my kid's going to think we were very, very overly trusting people. Humanity, because I'm sure that all of this stuff is finally going to be locked down in a way that you and I personally have control over the data that people have on us, governments and everybody included, I would imagine, rather than the other way around.
Absolutely. You know, and again, you know, there's people working on some of that. I was just talking recently with someone who's, you know, to bring up the medical records, they're doing exactly what you talked about. Is using blockchain technologies to put all of your medical records on it, but where you have the control over it, right? And so you can say, okay, well, these are the records that I'm going to let this doctor have, and these are the ones that I'm going to let the insurance company have, right? And it stops there, right? Because you're giving the authorization. And again, because it's put securely on a blockchain where the information is spread out and copied in multiple places, you can't go in like you can into a centralized system and break into it and take it because there has to be an authentication across all of the different nodes to say, okay, this is a real request.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of the modern day rackets that are kind of deemed the darlings of our modern economy would have a hard time too. If I was only sharing what I wanted to share with insurance companies, they probably wouldn't want to insure me anymore because they see a lot of stuff they want to see that they work into their data models to figure out how long I'm going to live, what kind of a reckless driver I am, and all of those things. And, you know, if I'm only willing to share so much, I'm probably going to not be welcome into their system, which is how they pad their books. It's, ooh, this guy is good, and we're going to charge him the same premium as the guys who are bad to cover the nut for the guys who are bad. And, you know, deemed solely by the algorithms that they're using in their systems to weigh their risks, right? It's kind of all stacked
right
in those kinds of businesses' favor and against us.
It is. And I think, you know, that's where we as a society have to kind of decide on some of these things and what we want to do. Again, the healthcare debate is a good one, right? Where you say, well, do we all pool our money and insure each other against, you know, certain kinds of risks because it can happen to anybody? Or do we just say, you know what, you're healthy, we're going to give you a low premium, and you're sick, we're going to make you pay through the roof for it, and that's just tough, right? So, how do we as a society want to handle that kind of
a
situation?
Is that a thing? I just the word peer-to-peer insurance just popped into my head from what you just said. Is that like a thing? Could that be a thing?
That definitely could be a thing. You know, and I think there's a lot of people, again, looking at technologies like that, right? There's a lot of peer-to-peer lending. I think peer-to-peer insurance could definitely be one of those. Where you're investing in somebody else. Absolutely. And these new technologies will enable that to happen. One of the nice things about blockchain and even the cryptocurrencies is because it's very cheap to send money, right? So you can actually send money it makes sense to send like 16 cents to somebody in Africa and help them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Today, if you wanted to send 16 cents to somebody in Africa, it'd probably cost you like $30 to do that, right? And so you would never want to do that.
And you might send it in a fashion that they can't get it. They still might not be able to get it out once you send it to them because it's in the wrong currency or the wrong kind of bank.
Exactly.
All these proprietary systems are really scary when you step outside of them and look at them from the outside, which most people are still not familiar with even the idea of, because it's just like a fish in the water. You can't tell a fish about water. And when we talk about our banking system and insurance and medical and all the stuff we've been talking about, everybody looks at that from the inside and has never stepped out and looked at it from the outside going, hey, well, that doesn't seem fair. And hey, that, why do they hold my money for 6 days before I can get it after I've transferred? And why are these fees so high? And what are they paying? Nobody really was questioning that until all this blockchain stuff started coming out. And people started, like you, talking about it really flips everything completely on its head. And I'm not sure a lot of people are getting that because they're all over here looking at crypto. And they're just like, I wonder if I'll make money with Bitcoin. And I'm like, you guys are missing the point, man. You must do that on the daily.
Right. Yeah, because that's all the speculation, and it's the latest thing, right? I mean, so there's always people who want to speculate on something, whether it's cryptocurrencies, real estate not too long ago, gold and silver, internet stocks. So people do that all the time, right? You want to be careful with that. But understanding what's really going on with the blockchain technology or with cryptos and how they're intended to be used, that's big and powerful, and it's going to revolutionize not only us here in the United States, but people around the world. And it might help the people around the world a lot faster than it does here in the U.S. They don't have all of these technologies and centralized systems. So it makes it very easy, for example, to use your smartphone and just send money. And, in China already, they don't use a whole lot of cash. People just use their smartphones to pay for things.
What about the issue of automation and technology replacing the need for me at the workplace. I know you read about this stuff too, universal basic incomes and how all of that kind of stuff is actually going to work, because I feel like just with cryptocurrency, it doesn't matter if Bitcoin or something else makes it. It's Pandora's box. People have gotten enough of a taste. Enough people have gotten a taste of that level of freedom or the idea of it that there's no way anybody's going to give that up. Point in the future, these things are going to change the way we do everything. And I keep thinking also about, you know, people who are out of work that are just going to be out of work. And, you know, if they want to stay in the area that they're in, there literally are no jobs there. And then there's these guys, these economists that are getting on TED Talks talking about universal basic incomes. Do you dabble in that? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so it's going to become a bigger and bigger issue. And I think, again, this is the there's the 10,000 foot, you know, leadership level about how do we navigate through this, right? So there's the point where people will lose jobs and say, well, how do they survive? How do they live? You know, and that's where the universal basic income comes in. And then there are lots of people who are opposed to that idea because they say, well, you know, you should be learning and adapting and working and not just sitting around waiting for these things to happen. You know, because some people do that. You know, some people are very resistant to the change. But I think, you know, it's the problem is bigger than those two extremes. So we have to figure that out. And what we really need are more discussions about what the future looks like. That needs to come from our government leaders, and it needs to come from business leaders. You know, it's very rare to find a CEO who says, this is where our company is going with technology. It's going to replace what we're doing over here. We're going to build this over here. So we're going to train you how to use this new technology over here. Very rarely does that happen. So there's got to be more discussion and openness about what's really happening. In the meantime, because that doesn't always happen, you have to know what to look out for yourself.
Yeah. I think it's guys like you who help people make these decisions, because right now, you know, this is like the water is warming up slowly and the frog doesn't know it's in danger. So it seems really stupid to some people to talk about things like universal basic income or things like that, or also cryptocurrency. There's a lot of people who are doing very well in the fiat system right now and would like that to not go anywhere, like Warren Buffett and the kings of that realm are really all against it. And I'm like, wonder why? And I don't see people asking those questions. They're just like, well, Warren Buffett says it's not going to be a big deal. So, you know, and he's been right about everything. And I'm like, in the fiat system, he's been right about everything. The one he wants to protect so much. And I think guys like you help to develop a conversation further, as far out, so people can get a big enough picture that they look back and then go, oh, yeah, we're going to totally need and we're going to prosper with some sort of a basic income structure for people who, you know, don't have anywhere to go in the workforce, because we have innovated them out of it completely. There's not like a lateral position they can go to in the company. We've eliminated that too. So now I understand what you're saying about basic income, and now I get it. I think that's probably one of your principal jobs, isn't it, is to get people to think far enough out there to draw the whole picture to where this thing that seems radical by itself here in this time and place makes a lot of sense.
Exactly. And it's not just, you know, one technology. It's so many of them. And that's why they call it the fourth industrial revolution. You know, because we're used to seeing like one new technology come out, you know, smartphones, for example, right? And the evolution from the landline phone to a cell phone to a smartphone, right? That was kind of happening all by itself in isolation. There weren't other things really happening at the same time. So it's kind of easy to grow and evolve with that. But when you look at an industrial revolution where so many things are changing all at the same time, so it's the technology, it's energy sources, it's the way you do things, it's business models. All of that is changing all at the same time. It's a very painful process. And one of the mistakes I think we all make is we say, well, we went through an industrial revolution before and we're all better off for it. But what we forget is that that Industrial Revolution took 40 years to shake out, which is the entire working life of a person.
Yeah.
And what the impact of that was. So if you go back and imagine, you know, the first Industrial Revolution, think about somebody who's like a craftsman, like Paul Revere, right? Master silversmith. And then suddenly you have machines being built that stamp out silver spoons. And that's the thing that he sells the most is spoons. He doesn't have a job anymore. Nobody needs him anymore, except, you know, maybe a small niche of people who want, you know, a high quality handcrafted thing because they could say that. Right. But the everyday person that he was selling to, they're all gone because, you know, they can buy a spoon for a fraction of the cost that was made by a machine. And then you think about his apprentice who had been training to take over a job like this in years. He's completely gone. Right. So he's never had a career.
Yeah.
All the training he's done is completely useless. And he's got to figure out what to do. You know, does he go and operate a machine?
For a lot less money, right?
Exactly. Because
these guys, especially the master, the expert, really doesn't have a lateral place to go. It's not like he can go pop over, not always. And
right.
he's good at what he does because he spent his entire life being good at that and crafting that. And I think people really are too quick to the, oh, he just needs to retrain, or he could. There's all kinds of jobs out there. There's nothing out there the equivalent of what he was doing, and often nothing near the amount of money that he was making at the time. So you're saying that a lot of these guys would have to go back and become apprentices themselves after a lifetime of being, you know, on top of the economic food chain, and you know, that's just not viable.
Exactly. And the people who come out on this, and we don't talk about this too much these days anymore, right, are the people who own the capital, you know, which is like the way things are produced, right? So the venture capitalists today, the people who own the machines, right, they're the ones who come out on top of this. You know, the people who are working, you know, you can't afford to buy one of these machines, right? Can you afford to buy it? Could Paul Revere afford to buy a silver stamping machine? Probably not. With any of these technologies, can you buy the machine? Can you buy the robot that replaces you?
Right.
I mean, and rent out the robot. You know, and some people have talked about that, right? But that's expensive, and that's probably more money than most people make. So it's an interesting idea. It's worth discussing and seeing where it works, where it doesn't work. But it's not
I'm
a
sure there's somebody
system.
Out there that's willing to rent it to you for a really nice premium. And now you're a slave to your own replacement robot, in a sense, economically. Wow, what a weird dystopian thing that is.
these are also the great opportunities for the entrepreneurs, right? Right? Can you build these things? Can you solve the problems? Can you solve the problem in a way that benefits people? And how do you do that?
I guess we kind of did that with really remedial stuff. This would be kind of like the primordial sludge of the revolution you're talking about, but chatbots on Facebook and in text messages. I mean, basically we built somebody a robot to replace them from having to sit there and type all day long to every single lead that they were getting in that framework. So the bot
right.
could actually seem pretty intelligent. You almost think you're talking to Frank Kern. You almost think, you know, it's like, are you really there, buddy? Is that you? And that's how good they've gotten. But it's also kind of what you're talking about, that we are starting to experiment that on things like that. And I don't know if people who are in it are realizing that that is the beginning of what you're talking about, or some part of the beginning of what you're talking about.
Right, and so there's tremendous opportunities that unlocks, right? So for somebody like Frank Kern, but, you know, for anybody else who wants to learn how to use it, right? But most of us don't have that mindset. We haven't been taught that, right? Our school systems don't teach entrepreneurship. So how would you go about learning that? How would you wake up to that possibility even? So that's part of what, you know, I'd like to help people understand. You know, you just have to start thinking different, right? First, understand the layout of what's happening. And now there's a whole new set of opportunities here, and entrepreneurship is a big part of it, right? There's the gig economy that's growing, or the sharing economy. you know, what's the thing that's right for you? And the answer is different for everybody. Everybody can't be an Uber driver. And, you know, and one day with self-driving cars, there's going to be no need for Uber drivers.
Yeah. With a 12-year-old, I'm watching him go through school now, and I'm comparing it to when I went to school. And I trusted what I was learning and from whom I was learning it implicitly. Like, this is the textbook for social studies. This is what's going on in the world. I trusted that implicitly, but I'm watching my kid go to school, and he goes to a private school, and he, has a really, really access to all the cool stuff, all the neat things, but they have a very, just like then, this is what you're supposed to teach in all of these subjects. The difference is the kids are also into hacking and programming and gaming like Fortnite, like crazy and all this stuff. And I'm watching my kid come home with a real awareness of the fact that what I learn in school is what I learn in school, but I know there's more out there. I don't trust implicitly everything that's just in a school curriculum, you know, like ISTEP testing and all that kind of stuff. And I'm proud of that, but it's also made me aware of the world that he's growing up in that is so radically different from ours. And I know a lot of kids are just going through school thinking the same thing we did. They don't know. They don't understand. You can hack your future. That you can. It's modular, and you can choose and pick, and all kinds of things. And a lot of them are still being told, go to school, go to technical vocational, or go to college, or whatever, to get a job. Almost as if it's like the old days where you're going to get a gold watch after 40 years. Strange, exactly. But they're aware of it. Some of the kids are aware of it.
Right. Well, and that's part of the frustration. You know, kids can be aware of it, but they still don't know what to do. Right. And parents might be aware of it and still not know what to do, right? So if you say, okay, well, I know that these things are out there, but you know what? I have no idea how to start a business. I can't help you start a business. So where do you turn? Right? So it does create kind of a have and have not set of people based purely on knowledge or awareness.
Yeah. It's almost like sitting on a pot of gold but not having any access to it, being aware that there's some real serious potential and opportunity in front of me, but there's a gap because we haven't institutionalized this. That's why we call it hacking. That's why we call it, you know, the gig economy and stuff like that, because we don't really have an institutional name for it that anybody trusts as, oh, that is that very solid and palpable thing over there that is also an option for me that is just as real as college or, you know, working for a company for, you know, a decade or whatever. So people feel, I think, a little bit like they're on their own and just floating out there. Like, this may or may not happen. I don't even know if I'm playing a lottery, let alone whether this is a lottery style, you know, shot in the dark that I'm taking here as an entrepreneur. Like, that's
right.
The weird part, I think, that we're in, right?
Exactly, and it's going to be here for a little while. It's what happens at the start of an industrial revolution, right? They all kind of start out with this way. With again, it's many things changing, right? It's not just about the technologies. It's, you know, the way you think about business is changing, right? I mean, right, going from that apprenticeship program to an assembly line, right? Completely different way of thinking about things. And as we go through what's coming up, right, we don't know what that new way of thinking is going to be yet, but, you know, it's going to be there. And we have to be aware that it's going to happen and be looking for it. Maybe we're the ones who comes up with it. I don't know. Right, it creates a lot of that uncertainty, right? And so we have to be comfortable with the uncertainty. We have to be comfortable with moving forward despite the uncertainty. And making mistakes and getting back up and learning from them and moving forward. And again, our school systems and even employment is not set up to allow for mistakes. A lot of companies, if you make a mistake, you're fired. Right. So that makes us overly risk averse. In schools, right, you're either right or you're wrong. You know, and if you make a mistake on the test, then, you know, you're less than somebody else who didn't make the mistake. Doesn't matter whether you kind of know it or you learn from the mistake. It's just
it's
wrong.
It's an amazing amount of it's like hubris looking at itself, because what what had we been taught back in the old days that has since been disproven? Yet if we got it wrong on the test at the time, we would fail. And mm-hmm. and we're doing the same thing. In a lot of ways, we still live in that world where, hey, wait a minute, this could probably be disproven in about 10 years, or we'll be doing it differently, or it'll just in other ways become immaterial. Yet you're basing my whole future on this stuff, and I think people are maybe just slightly waking up to that too, going, you know what, whatever you're placing as an obligation on me now, today, I've seen enough, I've read enough about how this changes in the future. It always does. And people are, I don't know, maybe there's just a little tiny kernel of a hacker spirit out there that's waking up in everybody in a modern society. Whether they know it or not, maybe they're not really, but they're swimming in it, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's hard to predict the future. It's hard to know what the jobs of the future are even going to look like, right? And so you say, well, how do I even prepare for that? You know, and the answer is you learn how to adapt to what's going on. It's a little bit like a whitewater rafting, right? You can never, if you go out whitewater rafting, right, you can't know what the whole path is going to be like and what every stroke is that you're going to do, right? But what you learn how to do, yeah, and that helps, right? But what you learn is how to balance. You learn what to do if you get spun around so that you can turn around and see where you're going. You learn what to do if you fall out of the boat so that you can get back in.
You learn what the helmet was for when you put it on sometimes.
Exactly. So you learn all of these, you know, basic skills about how to adapt and move along with what's going, as opposed to feeling like you have to be perfect about absolutely everything to get to the end.
Yeah. What a weird time we live in. And the thing is, it took you coming on this show, and I'm sure it's true for a lot of listeners, and Gina, that you come on and you immediately start spinning tales that are far outside of our daily journeys and the things that we think about as business people. We're thinking about fulfillment this week, next month. We might have a longer-term goal that is my book's coming out in 9 months, but that's something that sits over on the edge of your desk. You know, and most of what we deal with, I think, in society mm-hmm. at large, is what is right in front of us. And that's why I really mm-hmm. think people like you are so incredibly important to society at large, because you're the only ones who really talk about things outside of what's right in front of our noses. And they're really mm-hmm. important things, and they can also help guide us to our next really big breakthrough decision. I get inspired talking to people like you just talking about things, because it wakes up pieces of my mind that stop working on problems that were that far down the road. Stop thinking and asking questions about things like that far down the road. So you kind of get people lit up like a Christmas tree, I think, talking about all this. So good that we have you on the show today.
And that's what I want, right? So, you know, make sure that people are awake and aware of what's happening. You don't have to obsess about it, right? Because it is important to get through the next day, right? So, right, the short term is important, right? But it's not everything. And you've got to spend a little bit of time thinking about the future and what that looks like.
Yeah. Yeah, what's going to happen? And everybody, once you ask them that question, they're really interested. I think everybody leans in on that. They just forget that they should have been asking that question a little bit more frequently than they have. And they're always so delighted when they find somebody who's been thinking about that a little bit or a lot and can tell them, hey, what's probably going to happen here? Or what are you thinking? What are you seeing out there? So let's bring that all home with, how do you help people with all this stuff? What is your main goal, the kinds of people that you want to work with, the kinds of companies mm-hmm. you work with, at what level? What's it look like for you out there, and how can people – get a lot closer to your sphere of influence so they can keep track of what you're...
Sure. So on two levels. So with companies, I help them think about the future and digital transformation, right? How do you prepare and move forward to the future? Not only with your technology, right, but you have to move the people along, right? That's usually where the biggest problems come from, is the information is not communicated to people in a way that they can see what the future looks like and what it means for them. So I want to help companies do that so that their projects are actually successful. And then on the individual basis, and this is the whole point of the book, is to help people wake up themselves to what's going to be happening and what the possibilities are, so that they themselves can take the steps that they need to, because nobody's going to bail them out. The government isn't going to tell you, this kind of job is going to be destroyed and this one's going to be created, so start learning a new skill, and this is the one that's right for you. Right? That's never going to happen. Your boss is not going to tell you that. If you're an entrepreneur, you've got to figure this all out, right? So we all have to figure this out. And so what I really want people to do is understand what's possible and start taking the steps today to learn something about new technologies, just be aware about what's going on, and think about how that's going to impact them, 2, 3, 5 years from today, because it's going to be here. And so I want people to think that. And that's really the whole purpose of the book, is to raise that awareness and start thinking about that. I'll also be launching later this fall something called the Future Proofing Academy, where I go through a lot of this, in more detail, and offer some tools for people to use to get through some of that.
What will be the range of topics on that? Would it be focused on kind of what your book is focused on in terms of jobs and things like that, or will it be broader?
It'll be broader. So there'll be different sections. Even the book is written in sections, but there's parts about it that's, again, about understanding the economy and what's possible, understanding the different technologies. There'll be parts about it that are more about personal development, because ultimately to get through all of this, it's all personal development, whether it's skills, increased self-awareness, how do you get yourself out there? If you're going to be an entrepreneur, you have to build your own brand and your personal brand. How do you get that out there for people to know and understand? When you're competing against robots, what makes you special compared to the robot, right? You have to know that.
I can't get over that this is like some introduction, some preamble to a movie or a series on Netflix, some futurist, like, somebody sitting down and working with you and going, all right, there's this robot for real that I'm competing with. And
I've been patient the entire show waiting to add one comment. Strangely enough,
right,
that Larry should be here today, but this morning my mom happened to have the news on, and there was a segment on the news just this morning about a new study that has come out that has said that 83% of all students and children relate well to robots, and that because of this study, they're predicting that there will be robots for babysitters, robots for tutoring, robots for this, robots for that. I'm sitting there
sure.
going, you've got to be kidding me. I can't even imagine it. And Larry comes on the show today.
That's how it works around here. We think of something and then we manifest the perfect guest for it.
Well, if you think about the movie or the book iRobot, right? I mean, that's what they were doing. If anybody's ever read the book or saw the movie, it's there. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Healthcare, they see a lot of need for robots. There's even like robot pets. Right, so if you can't have an actual dog or a cat, you've got these little robots that are furry and they have tails that wag and purr, because that's very comforting for people, especially if you're in the hospital or a nursing home or something. So even robot pets.
Wow.
Well, everybody listening, no matter where you're listening, find links to find out more about what Larry's up to his latest book and whatever's going on in his world, I highly recommend you check it out. Larry, this has been fascinating. I wish we had this is the days I wish our show was 2 hours, because I could go a lot longer. We've only scratched the surface of the things I'm curious about in terms of what's coming. So we have to have you back on at some point. Please, please come back on.
Oh, sure. I'd be
Thank
happy to.
Thank you so much, Larry. Fascinating conversation. And
Thank
we will
you.
Be back
Thank
same time, same place next week, everybody. Have a fantastic week. Thanks again, Larry.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Tune in next week for another episode of Leverage Masters. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook on our Leverage Black Book page to keep up with the latest. We'll see you next time on Leverage Masters.